Okay, thank you very much. Welcome everyone to the PDP work team call on today's Thursday, July 23rd, 2009. And I'm going to turn it over to Glenn to take a roll of who's on the call.
Thank you, Jeff. On the call, we have Jeff Newman, Paul Diaz from the Registrar constituency, Avery Doria, GNSO Chair and NCA, James Bladeau, Registrar, Bertrand de la Chapelle, GAC, Wolf Knoben from the ISP. And I don't think anybody, has anybody else joined? And I don't see anybody having joined on the Adobe Connect. And for staff, we have Margie Malam, Glenda Saint-Jury, and we have apologies from Marika, who is traveling, Margie, who is traveling, and we have apologies from the NCUC member, who is Gabriel Pinheiro.
Glenn, this is Bertrand. Just one remark, a factual remark. When you list me in the in any written document, mention French Ministry of Foreign Affairs rather than GAC, because I'm participating but not representing GAC as a whole.
Okay. Thank you very much for that detail, Bertrand.
Okay. So thank you, Bertrand. Thank you, Glenn. If I wrote this down correctly, so we don't have anyone from the BC, the non-commercials, the IP, or the ALAC. Is that
quite right?
Okay, so we have representatives from
registry.
Well, actually, I'm the chair, so we don't have our registry rep either.
Okay, well.
But so all we have is our registrar reps and ISP and Avery in her personal or GNSO chair capacity, either one, either or both. Okay, that's a little.
Don't mute.
She's on mute?
Yes.
Okay. So that's a little disappointing, but and maybe, Avery, if you're listening.
Yeah, I am listening. Sorry.
Okay, if you could, I know you have a council call later on.
Yeah.
If there's anything you could do, I mean, this is our regularly scheduled time, so it's not like we've moved anything around. If you could maybe help us on the council call to make a plea for people to show up and participate.
Although I haven't been historically good about showing up for this particular meeting myself, certainly I'll be slightly hypocritical and suggest that other people should.
We would appreciate it. I mean, it's understandable for you. You have a lot of stuff going on all at the same time. It looks like, Paul, you have something to add?
Yeah, Jeff, I was just going to ask. I mean, as you were discussing earlier with the schedule, don't have a quorum today. Do you want to try and maybe shift the schedule while we have it every other Thursday, push it to next week, and then every week after that? Because that could get us avoiding that third week in August, which is problematic.
Yeah, I mean, we could try to schedule something for next week and see if people show up. I'm not sure if a week notice is good, but why don't we try to do that anyway? I think that's a good idea. And we can make this call a little bit short and just maybe make a plea for you guys to help answer or start discussion on some of these questions that were raised the last time. The people that are on this call, is next Thursday at this time something that's doable for you all?
Well, Wolf Knoben speaking. So for me, the next 2 weeks are not doable. For me personally, well, I could try to get somebody from some of the ISPCP else, but I don't know. I personally cannot participate the next 2 weeks.
Okay. How about, Paul, you'd be available, and what about James?
Yes, I think I will be.
Yes, it should be.
Okay, and Bertrand?
Well, next week is going to be hard.
So you're going to be the same place I am, Bertrand, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah, it'll be hard for me, too, next week.
Is that an IETF?
Actually, I'm not going to be at the IETF. We're both going to be teaching at a summer school.
Ah, okay.
Nice.
All right, well, let's why don't we do that? Because we really don't have many people here on this call, and I feel horrible. Why don't we try to? We'll schedule for next week, and I'll send emails personally to each of the members to see if they can actually make it. We're definitely keeping the next call on the 6th, so we're not going to move that one. And also, for the people on this call, there were 4 questions that were submitted, and you guys were all, well, Bertrand, you may not have been on the last call. I can't remember.
No, I was not, no.
There were 4 questions that came up really from the survey. We went over the last results of the mm-hmm. survey that was done, and there were 4 new questions that kind of came up that we all agreed were important for us to help Marika, who is actually writing up all of the phase 1 the answers to the questions with recommendations on changing bylaws or keeping them same or what we need to do to implement what we've come up with. So if you all can weigh in on those 4 questions. And the other thing that she posted was the timelines for some of the recent PDPs that have gone on, I guess, in the last couple of years, just so when we discuss timelines on the next call, we can have some base to look at that and try to come up with some realistic timelines for the steps that we've discussed. And I think what came up on the last call was that we're not necessarily going to mandate, okay, this must be done within 15 days, but provide ranges of time so that, you know, it's much more, it allows some flexibility in the schedule.
It's Marilyn. Sorry, I was late. Would you repeat that last statement about 15 days?
Oh, hi, Marilyn. You didn't sign into Adobe, huh?
You know, we have a choice. I can either be on the phone with you or not able to participate as much as I love Adobe.
Well, I'm glad you made the right choice. So Marilyn, unfortunately, we don't have that many people on the call.
So it's really good I showed up.
Exactly. So what we're discussing,
yeah, saving the day.
Is the possibility of trying to do another call next Thursday at the scheduled time.
Thursday will not work for me. That's the 30th, right?
Yeah.
I'm unfortunately on a plane. So that I could do it on Friday, but I can't do this time because I'm actually on the plane right at this time.
All right.
I could do it later in the day, but that may not be convenient for others.
Well, we're keeping our call definitely on the 6th, right, because that's our normal time every other week.
Yeah.
So we're definitely keeping that call. I will email everyone to try to get everyone in the group to try to figure out if having a call next Thursday is something that's doable or not.
Okay.
It may or may not be. But what I was saying is that there were 4 questions, and I know, Marilyn, you were on the call last time. So
right.
So was James and Paul. There were 4 questions that came out that we thought were kind of important in drafting up recommendations on what we're calling phase 1, which is the planning and initiation phase.
Right.
So these 4 questions we thought would help us. We discussed it on the call, but because there weren't that many people on that call either, we wanted to put it out to the full group. And the second thing I said, which is probably when you joined and heard the 15 days, is ultimately once Marika comes back with a report on phase 1,
uh-huh.
We need to discuss timelines. It's hard to discuss timelines before you see that report and all the different steps and recommended steps that we've kind of come up with.
Right.
And then what we had discussed in the last call was not necessarily tying it down. So, like, right now it says that an issues report must be provided within 15 days. What we were saying on the call in the last few calls was that we thought it would be better to provide ranges of days as guidelines as opposed to a mandatory, inflexible, drop-dead date.
Exactly. Right. With you. Okay,
yeah,
thanks.
Right. So that's kind of where it came up with. But it's hard to have that discussion without seeing all the steps in front of you. And so hopefully by the next call, we'll have something there. So it's the timelines that we would start the call with next time. Hopefully we'll have answers to these 4 questions. And then we would start on phase two, which is the which was sent by Marika to the list on, I forget the exact day here. It was on Tuesday, June 30th, 10:57 my time. But that was sent, and I think Margie's putting it up if I see that correctly. Anyway, that document basically talks about phase two, which is the which is coming up right now. Well, anyway.
Trying to find it. Sorry.
That's okay. I have it pulled up in front of me, so it's the proposal review and voting thresholds is stage two. So that contains questions like how to. Is there an appeals mechanism in case the GNSO votes against initiating a PDP requested by, let's say it's requested by an advisory committee or supporting organization? So to consider whether there should be some appeals mechanism. You know, the answer may be no, but you know, we need to consider that question. Should the approved voting thresholds that, you know, the thresholds about initiating a PDP that have already been approved, is that does that apply to the entire GNSO council or just members present, which is the current practice? The current wording is not very clear on that. And when I mean current wording, I mean the wording that was approved last year by the board. And then where in the process is a charter for the working group done? And how is that done? But also, so I need to also, and Glenn, if we can, or Margie, if we could take note, we should coordinate on that question with Jay Scott's group.
Okay.
Make sure that they have not discussed that yet, or if they have, to get feedback on that.
On the chartering, number four?
Yep, on number four. Question five is, should expedite be available in case there's some emergency and if or urgency, and how do we define when that happens, and how is that done? How do we involve advice from other advisory committees or supporting organizations and obtain consistent input from the board in the process? And this item seven was evaluate the ICANN staff costs and resources needed to conduct the PDP and prioritize existing policy work and revisit their existing deadlines and deliverables. So those are the overall categories. I think, Margie, the other thing that we'll do, you and I, is fill in the current practice and rules, if there are any.
Okay. Fill in current practice?
Yeah, that second column.
Okay.
And then we'll redistribute the chart.
Sure.
Okay. I wish we had more people so we could actually answer some of these questions, but it just seems like with a few amount of people, it might not... It might be difficult.
Why?
Well, I mean, we could discuss it, I guess, and then...
Hi. Can I add one piece of content?
Sure.
On four, since that group I have been participating in more actively than I have this one, while certainly you should go talk to it, to Jay Scott, but by and large, that group has not been looking at when that process, other than the fact that, of course, it's the working group charter is there before the working group, but where and who does it, and necessarily how a organization starts a working group has not been a focal point.
Okay.
That's... So I think you need to attach it where you think it needs to be attached and then see how they fit. But
okay, that's good to know. I think it's an interesting So today, when a charter is developed, it's really been, well, obviously, the last few PDPs,
yeah.
Well, at least the ones that where working groups have been initiated,
yeah.
What has been the practice?
It's an evolving process because we're still trying to figure out what works. What we started with at one point, and also because we're trying to operate within the current bylaws, at least their spirit, if not, you know, because, but and so all processes get checked with legal to see if this works. So one of the things, the character of a working group now is the way in which the committee of the whole does it. So there was originally this notion that said first you had to vote on PDP, then you have to do the vote on task force. Once you've done the vote negative on task force, you can, committee of the whole can say, we want a working group, let's do a charter. Now, more recently, and this is again in consultation with legal, is that if you, and because these votes have a different threshold, it's difficult. But basically, we've been trying to combine having the charter at the point at which the decision is made for the PDP, but that's not working quite right either, because we still have this task force or not, and we're trying to combine the task force decision in the PDP decision, but that only works if thresholds work out correctly. So,
well, let me ask a different way then. So you have the issues report, council, let's say it's the new voting thresholds, they vote, yes, this is worth initiating a PDP on. At that point, in theory, after that is when a charter will be created, but would the charter go back to the council to vote on that? Or
I would think it would have to. I think that, and that's why the charter can be part of the PDP process, and that's really a decision. When you vote on, yes, let's do a PDP, you can say, and you vote on the charter too at that point. Or you can say, and this is a decision I don't think that's been made, is that then you vote on the charter. Now, theoretically and under the rules, because only a committee of the whole can do the working group as we've done it, we do it after. But there's no real reason, I think, why the charter can't be part of the PDP if that's what people want to do.
So in essence, when it goes to the council, in theory, what could be required is both the issues report and the proposed charter. And then the council would have two different votes, first whether to initiate the PDP, and then the second one is whether this is the appropriate charter for the group.
Yeah, or you may want to continue doing it after, and then yet the decision one would have is depends on what the issues report recommends. If the issues report recommends that working groups be done, then a charter's put together. But it may be presumptuous to set up a working group before there's been a PDP vote. So it really can go either way. In one way, the strength is when you vote for the PDP, you know what you're voting for in terms of working groups because you're doing the charter at the same time. What goes against it is you've put a lot of work into something that people then say, I don't care that you've worked out a charter. You know, we don't want to do this PDP. So you really have a cost on either side.
And then, of course, if it's decided, so let's say you do have the PDP vote first, and then they do a charter, you're going to have to assign people and figure out who serves on that drafting team to come up with the charter, you know, all those kind of logistics, and then how long it's going to take to get on the council agenda for the next meeting. So you could talk about an extra month delay in the process.
It's definitely, with three meetings, thrice weekly, and of course, I mean every three weeks, whatever the right word for that is, and you know, just the amount of stuff, it basically takes 1 to 2 meeting cycles, because you'd have to be ready in 2 weeks to be able to get it on the agenda for the meeting in 3 weeks, and that's rare. So it's usually a 6-week cycle before it gets voted on.
Jeff.
Yes.
This is Bertrand. May I ask a question also to Avery? I may have missed a step in some previous call, but Avery, could you explain a little bit more this comment you made regarding the vote on a task force or a working group? I was left with the impression that actually the reform was replacing the task force model.
I was talking about what I do now.
Okay.
Because I'm still working
Fine.
Under the old.
Okay. Fine. Just another point regarding the question that was mentioned on urgency as an insert. I wonder whether a specific simplified procedure that is separate shouldn't be developed for cases of urgency under specific criteria, rather than trying to stick within the general process. the case for urgency. You see what I mean? It's one thing to try to design something that covers absolutely everything, be it a very simple development of guidelines or a very complex policy development, and at the same time accommodate things that are urgent, things that can take several years. Maybe we should distinguish a little bit more, and if we want to address the notion of urgency, maybe it requires being set on the side as a specific procedure.
Actually, you know, that if you one natural dividing space could be, you have one hopes that there'll be a strategic plan. You know, that's one of the things that the council needs to, and the GNSO in general needs to get into, is having a prioritized strategic plan. Those things, since they'll be planned into the future, taking 6 weeks, wouldn't be a big bother, whereas if you plan it in the schedule. Whereas anything that rises ad hoc has, you know, basically, you know, something that jumps to the front of the burner because, you know, it's hot, could have a different procedure. And then there's the natural dividing line without having to decide, is this an emergency, is not,
mm-hmm.
because that has a qualitative aspect.
So before we get to the emergency aspect, I mean, I want to know if there's comments like James and Paul and others on your thoughts on the whole development of a charter for the working group and what we've been talking about as far as timing. You know, another, so I guess, you know, what Aubrey was saying was, it may be presumptuous for an issues report to contain a proposed charter because the issues report may actually recommend or not recommend creating a working group. But could we say if the issues report recommends a working group that they should include a proposed charter or leave that, because the issues report is really under staff control, or is that something that should be more under council control?
Jeff?
Yep.
May I chime in on that?
Absolutely, sure.
Following the discussions that took place, particularly in Sydney, on the working group model, I think there is a distinction we can make regarding the working group charters. This distinction is as follows. There is a basic template, which there are a certain number of guidelines that will be applicable probably to all or almost all working groups. The second element is for each working group filling the elements of this template. For instance, the template charter may have something that says the chair is column, and then you fill the name of the chair, or the subject and the purpose of this group is, and you fill that. So these are two elements. One element is permanent, it's a template. And this doesn't have to be drafted each time. And what has to be drafted is basically filling the blanks. And then there's a third dimension, which is additional modules that are not put within each and every single charter, but that can be picked according to the issue in, for instance, requesting additional research or things that are optional. Would that distinction be workable? Because the more standard the working group charter is, apart from the options and filling in the blanks, the less the question of whether the charter is being prepared in the issues report or not is important. If it's a template and relatively standard, then it is available as soon as the council decides to set up the group.
Well, James, you wrote a comment on the board. You said depends if is there a drafting team. Do you want to elaborate on that?
Yeah, you know, you kind of caught me multitasking with your last question, but if I'm understanding correctly, the sequence of whether a charter or a template is included in the issues report developed by staff or whether that's developed on the table at a council meeting. a couple of working groups successfully have a pre-PDP drafting team that's relatively small and short-lived that presents at least an outline to council that can be readily transformed into a charter. So I think that that's a, I don't know if that's the norm or the exception. It certainly is common in the ones that I've paid it in, and it seems that that's pretty, that's one pretty effective approach there.
Okay, Paul?
Yeah, just to follow on with what James has said, I would consider or suggest that we be careful about potentially giving staff even more responsibility. You know, we've already heard in our previous discussions some very strong differences of opinion about what staff, whether it's general counsel or the professional staff, sort of what the limits on their role should be. And I think that some folks will probably feel quite uncomfortable if staff is now asked to provide the charter up front. I'm just kind of thinking on a more controversial issue that may be before the council that you, in the interest of time, I can see, you know, wanting to try and roll it all in and get it done quicker, but I think the community is probably better served having the sort of transparent process of going through the extra step, having council deliberate, having the councilors think through, and then making a decision rather than having everything presented to them, what some might see as a fait accompli by staff.
Okay. James?
I agree completely. We have a lot of recent working groups where the charter has been put under a microscope as it applies to various issues, and I think that if the genesis of that were staff, that that would just, you know, that any time saved by having staff put that in an issues report would be burned up in the working group just going over and over those issues and how they apply to the charter. So I agree with Paul. I think it's best that that comes from Cal.
Okay.
If that's what you were saying, Paul, and I think it was.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds like you and Paul agree. Bertrand?
Yeah, actually, I wanted to make a precision on what I said earlier. When I was talking about a template or something, I didn't have in mind at all something that would be prepared by the staff. What I was thinking is that, and I was supposing that actually the work team on working groups has one of its goals, to elaborate something that is a typical working group mechanism that basically functions in almost all cases. Like it says basically, and the process and the bylaws would say, this is how a process is initiated, issues report what we've been discussing, one. Second, if a PDP is being launched, it will use a working group model, and apart from the bylaws, there is a document that says this is the way a working group model works, and this is how a charter should be drafted. So I think the less filling in the blanks, the more the format of the working group model is predetermined, the more previsible is the overall process. I was very, very surprised, for instance, when I began to get involved in this PPSC and OSC process and with all the sub-working groups, to see how long it took to draft a specific charter for each of the subgroups, whereas, in fact, when you compared them, they were very, very, very similar because they were naturally reusing the same kind of procedures, more or less. And I was basically listening to exactly the same discussions in the OSC and in the PPSC and each of the subgroups. So the more standard the working group model and charters are, I think the best we will have worked. So it was not about the staff including a charter in the issues report. It was more having a procedure that says working groups work this way. Maybe I was not clear.
Okay. Aubrey?
Okay, yeah. I guess two things. One, I had missed I fell off the line for a bit, so I had missed whether anyone had actually suggested that staff writes charters. I would personally think that was a really, really, really bad idea and would be one of those that was really, really, really uncomfortable with it. On what Bertrand was saying, I think, yes, I think that what the working team has been doing is essentially creating the template for charters with questions and guidance on, you know, what goes into and doesn't go into various parts of it. I think when Bertrand talks about it taking a long time to do a charter, even though they all look similar, is in essence, yes, people are already using a template. But really what takes time in doing any charter, and, you know, and this is not just in ICANN, is really trying to nail down what the work items are and what the work items aren't and what milestones need to be there. And so I'm not assuming it'll get shorter simply because it's a template, because in essence at the moment there already is an implicit template that evolves with each use, but an implicit template.
Okay. Bertrand?
And can I get in the queue as well?
All right. After Bertrand.
Yeah, actually I want to follow on what Avery said. I think she's absolutely right. One of the concerns I have, or I raise a flag, is that sometimes it is not necessary to put in the charter itself the whole gamut of the work plan and the objectives and that sort of thing. Because I agree with her, it takes a lot of time, but surprisingly enough, it is already beginning to address the substance when you discuss those elements. And the best example was in the setting up of those works regarding the PDP or the working team model, is that a lot of discussion went on the question of consensus. And guess what? Defining consensus or rough consensus is a huge part of how you define the new working group model. So strangely enough, we were discussing for the charter one of the very subjects that we were supposed to discuss as a group. So I would favor, in general terms, something that is more iterative, like having a process whereby you don't launch just the working group and it's going on with the whole period. It is launched for a short period, for instance, with a first part of the group that will be defining some of the milestones and some of the priorities or that sort of stuff. The faster you can make the charter, the quicker you probably can get into the working group actual discussion. I know it's a balance, but I agree with Avery that what takes time is to put in the charter all those elements regarding the milestones and the objectives. But in some cases, the tendency is to get into too much detail and then making the process longer, whereas it is already part of the discussion. It's a balance issue.
Okay, Marilyn?
I'm going to repeat part of what I said on the last call. You know, I must say that I both respect and understand the caution that is being expressed by counselors about not being captured by staff. But I'm as worried as a member of the community, and remember I'm on this group in my individual capacity, I am as worried as a member of the community about having counselors who think that they are, and in fact are, elected to represent different parties, different interests, or who are appointed by the nominating committee. I feel there needs to be a real openness to hear expert reports. So I just want to be sure we're capturing the idea that, you know, and I appreciate the fact that people have a sense that I'm elected to do so, right? I've been in that role before. I fully understand it. But I also want to be sure that we are in a position to ask for expert input from staff and to really hear expert reports or experts that are brought in or other kinds of useful fact-based information. So just want to keep that back on the burner, because I know some of you who are on the call today did not hear me say that on our last call.
Okay. Thank you, Marilyn. So let me go back and try to summarize a couple things. What I'm hearing strong support for, in this, at least with the people that are on the phone, is that a charter would need to be developed. Well, let me ask the question. Does everyone feel that a charter needs to be developed prior to the actual working group being constituted? Avery has responded that she does. Does anybody disagree with that notion?
Can you repeat that, Jeff?
Okay, the question is, so the council has decided to initiate a PDP. The question I'm asking is, does the charter for the working group need to be does there need to be a charter prior to the creation of the working group? Now remember, at least what we've done in the past is that the working group needs to recommend changes to the charter, and that would go up to the council to vote on that. But there would have to be some sort of stable charter in place before the working group. It looks like a few people are putting check marks. Avery and Bertrand have raised their hands. So, Avery?
Yeah, I mean, I believe there has to be a charter, and I believe once a working group starts working, then if they feel that the charter is inappropriate, they need to renegotiate it with the council. So I don't believe that they're stuck with a charter, but I believe that they have to have a starting charter that lays out the scope. But then they renegotiate.
Okay, and then Bertrand?
Quickly, I support the distinction potentially between a starting charter and the iterative modification of the charter. This goes into the iterative mode. I think the quicker people can begin discussing the issue and shaping the work of the working group, the better. But I'm not familiar enough as to the current work of the working group team to see whether the charter is or not a condition for starting the discussion in the working group model. The better.
Okay, and James?
Yeah, and I'm going to try and say this as quickly as possible. I agree with what Avery mentioned as far as the working group needs a charter to begin and begin its work, and that it's open to renegotiation. But I wonder if it's relevant to discuss any sort of guidelines on that renegotiation process, and maybe we can defer this for later in the document, but it seems like I've been on a couple of working groups where the charter was in a continuous state of renegotiation. You know, maybe not by the balance of the working group participants, but by, you know, a faction or something like that. So I don't know if there's anything that we can do to put some structure around that renegotiation process so that it's not necessarily a ongoing, perpetual sort of free-for-all. Thanks.
Okay, thanks, James. My view on that question is that I think that question actually involves both work that we're doing and work that the working group is doing.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, the working group work team can discuss their process on how to bring up changes, but I think where it hands off to us is what do we recommend that the council does. Or what is the process once it comes out of the working group? Say the chair of the working group presents changes to the council, then what's the process that the council follows after receiving that? I think is where we would kind of jump back in. So I think that's, Margie, something we should probably write down for coordination with Jay Scott, with the working group work team.
Yeah, and I had a comment too whenever you have a moment.
Sure, no, right now, that's good, yeah.
Sure, I was just following up with what was said about the renegotiation and a couple of our groups we've had issues about the charters. I guess my question to Avery would be, how formal do you want that process to be, or how formal should it be? is it something that the council is voting on every time there needs to be a change in the charter, or is it more, more informal, where you just kind of get a feel for the council, and you don't have to wait till the next council meeting to get the charter clarified?
I don't have a wanting. I think that's something that we're still trying to figure out. I have a strong notion, I guess, of what the liaisons between the council and such can do. And I really believe that those changes should be able to go through relatively informally unless somebody raises a flag. So, in other words, a liaison bringing to the council the, here are the changes that wish to get made. Are there objections? Do we need discussions? Wait a certain amount of time and go on. And, of course, though, you know, needing a formal answer back from the council. But I don't see it needing to make it very formal, but, of course, you know, it may evolve that way. I really don't know. I've tried to make it less formal.
Okay, so let me go back to summarizing then. Because I think I missed a step that may be obvious, but I want to state it anyway. So we all think that there should be a charter, there must be a charter prior to the creation of a working group, and that a charter is kind of a starting off charter that may be changed by some process, first by approval within the working group, and then some process for approval by the council. The question that's in between is, and I think the answer is yes, but I want to make sure it is yes, that so a charter needs to be drafted, there must be that charter. Does it need to be approved by the council prior to the creation of the working group?
I would think so.
I mean, it sounds like an obvious question, but...
Yeah.
Agreed, I think so.
So if that's the case, it sounds like people, does anyone disagree with that notion that it needs to be approved by the council? So the next obvious question is, how is it approved by the council? What are the thresholds? And maybe it's not for this call, but it's certainly something that we need to throw out there. What are going to be our recommended thresholds for approval by the council? Is it the same as a PDP, which is a fairly low one? Is it, or is it something different?
And I think at your base, you've got, you don't necessarily need to define something if you're willing to take what's been being defined as the base level approval for the council of majority of both houses. And as that's been defined as the base level for anything where we haven't defined previously, et cetera. And so that's, of course, a default if you just want to leave it at default.
Right. So it could be... But remember, the creation of, or voting in, I believe voting in favor of a PDP, is that?
Yeah, that's defined. But the approval of the working group charter and anything that's done after that is not defined. So certainly, yes, the starting of a PDP is a defined other threshold, but the rest of the stuff isn't. And so it can be, if you want to, in the rules and procedures, or it can just go to the default majority of both houses.
Right.
You know, and that's you know.
What you run into difficulty is, so let's say a PDP can be created by, and I can't remember the exact thresholds, Margie, maybe you can correct me, but initiating a PDP could be, let's say it's 100% of one house. Couldn't it be done by one house alone, or...
No, I think you need to have some of both. I should remember this stuff. I should know by heart.
I know.
Yeah, I have it. So you create an issues report, requires more than 25% vote of both houses or a majority of one house. And then to initiate a PDP within scope, it requires more than 33% of both houses or more than 66% of one house. And then to initiate a PDP not within scope requires more than 75% of one house and a majority of the other house.
So what you could have with given that, and I'm not sure we want this or don't want it, is you could have people holding up the PDP. You can basically create a higher standard for the approval of a charter than the initiation of the PDP, and in one sense hold hostage the work of the PDP by not agreeing to the charter. Does that make sense?
It's possible.
So, we could discuss this issue, but maybe save it for the next call or save it for an email discussion, but I think you need to think of the ramifications of just going to the baseline approval and the games that can be played. You know, we have a fairly low threshold for the creation of a PDP because we want policy work to be done, but we want to make the charter a higher standard, which may, you know, essentially make the initiation of the PDP standard higher too. So, does anyone have any comments on that? Sounds like someone's driving in the rain, or
yeah, I'm trying to raise my hand, but it didn't.
Oh, okay, sorry, Bertrand.
No, it's okay. Just one element. This is always the same question I'm coming back again to, is the iterative nature of this process. I like Avery's idea of something that is the initiation of the working group work, and I could imagine that actually the starting point for the working group is a charter that is a very small charter somehow, as template as possible, that basically one of the elements will be to maybe for the council to designate a convener for the initial work with a short time span that produces the actual more detailed charter. Isn't that a way to kickstart the process? Because otherwise we will get into this back to the council. You will get one decision by the council to say, yes, we want a PDP, and then there will be something that will require to get a discussion of a charter at the next council meeting and another one and so on. Maybe it's easier to help people kickstart the process and have a very limited initial charter. And the first task is to basically finalize within a specific time frame the final charter of the working group on the basis of the general template. Does that make sense?
So I think it makes sense. The problem, or the issue, not problem, issue is that there have been a lot of debates recently about the scope of a working group.
Mm-hmm.
And I really think that the scope needs to be adequately defined in a stable manner prior to people forming this working group. Because remember, in the working group, there's not going to be a formal voting structure in the sense of, or the sense of each constituency gets one person, and then mm-hmm. you have some sort of balance between constituencies or stakeholder groups. You're basically going to have a bunch of people that may be there in their individual capacity. I just think it's very controversial, the actual scope of the working group, and it's certainly been debated. I think a formal voting process at the council level with a stable charter, one that's open for renegotiation, in other words, they can make recommendations. But I think a good head start is something that we really need to have before the working group is created.
But who will draft the charter itself? Because we are always in a sort of recursive mechanism whereby we need a working group or at least a group of drafting to produce the charter to be allowed to have a group that is going to do the work. But who creates the group that will draft the charter for the group? Is it the council?
Right, so you've actually jumped to a question I haven't gotten to yet. Because I was just trying to get to the points of summarizing and saying, well, we think that we've agreed that there must be a starting charter. We need to decide thresholds as to how that's, and we agree it needs to be approved by the council. We need to agree at some point on what those thresholds are. Is it the base level, which is a majority of both houses? recognizing that that could actually place a higher burden than actually the initiation of the PDP, which may be okay, may not be okay. We need to discuss the ramifications of that. And then we agree that once there is a charter, I don't know if that's someone trying to mute, or that we agree that once the working group is constituted, that there should be some mechanism for the working group to recommend changes to the charter that need to be approved by council. And again, we would need to discuss what those thresholds are. Assuming all of that to be true, you've raised another question, which I think we all agree on, which is that it sounds like the drafting of the charter should not be part of the issues report, sounds like from people on this call, and it should not be something that's drafted by staff. Is that, did I interpret that correctly?
Sorry?
Yeah, Aubrey?
I think he's interpreted what I think. That doesn't mean that staff shouldn't be strong participants like others in it. I think in answer to the who drafting that Bertrand put out, that is one of the things that I think in sort of its management process, one evolution is that people have been reaching out, not just to council members when it's come time to write one of these things, but reaching in the constituencies. Who is it that's interested in working on this?
Mm-hmm.
You know, who puts up their hand to say, yeah, I want to be part of it. You have also, one would hope, someone within the council that says, or perhaps more than one, yeah, I want to be in that liaison role to it. And that those are the people that go away and create, you know, the first ones that are the first drafts of the charter that are discussed and then approved. So I think if you can't gather that set of people by doing outreach into the constituency and community and liaisons to come up with a small number of people that are, you know, active doing things, people that are saying, not only do I want to write the charter, but I want to work on this thing. I think you've got the group that produces the drafting team that would create a charter.
Mm-hmm.
And should it be council that creates the rules? In other words, should it be the council that says, okay, we've initiated the PDP. Right now, the next step is to get a charter for the working group. You know, we direct however it wants to manage, but basically it will send it out, seek volunteers, and then say we'd like to see a charter at our next meeting or in two meetings from now to vote on.
It would seem to me that that would be the kind of process that the council would, you know, manage.
And I don't think we need to. We might maybe put suggested time frames in our report, but I don't think we need to formally recommend exactly how the council does that. Bertrand, you have your hand up?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, it's just to follow up on what I was, and you said. I think the best way, and the more I listen to the discussion, the best way is to make the beginning almost as automatic as possible, and then things get refined. I very much like what Avery said regarding the very first step in those working group approach is to make sure that people who are interested and can contribute or should contribute to the work of this particular on this particular subject are actually part of this. And so I personally would see something that basically says, okay, there's the first initial phase. There's a general feeling that the issue must be addressed, and the council says, yes, we will launch a PDP. Then from now on, the initial steps would be almost automatic. For instance, the council should maybe have just to say, this is, we designate one person to steer the initial first steps to establish the charter and to gather the people who are interested in taking part in this group or in this work. And so basically all the council would have to do then is to designate someone to do the initiation, like a preliminary chair or interim chair, and the template for the work of this person would be available. It is the process that says when somebody is designated, the first task is to gather or make a call for comments or to invite people to indicate their interests, get the people to begin a preliminary draft along the template of the charter, and try to finalize this charter to be sent to the board, to the council afterwards. But ideally, the council should have probably only to designate one person to kickstart this process.
Okay. Any questions or comments on that? Okay, so let me go back and summarize that. I'll keep summarizing to make sure I have it all right. And then what we're going to do is we'll put this out as a question in email with what we've come up with on this call for agreement points to make sure that people on the email list agree as well. So we all agree that the working group must have a charter before it's constituted, that charter needs to be approved by council, and we need to determine how that is. We think the charter, the council should manage the drafting process of that charter, including the solicitation of volunteers to create that charter. Maybe, as Bertrand said, put one person in charge of that or to oversee that process. That drafting team, I guess, if you will have milestones created by the council as to when to come back, and the council will set a date to approve that charter. Once the charter is approved and the working group is constituted, there needs to be a process by which changes to the charter are approved by the council, and that involves work by both the working group work team to come up with that internal process of how the working group does that, and then also by us on what happens once the council receives the request by a working group to change the charter and how it votes on that.
Mm-hmm.
Did I capture all of that?
Yeah, can I add one little thing?
Sure.
And that's when Bertrand and you mentioned it in your recap, was talking about the putting someone in charge. That was what I meant about what's being defined as a liaison role between the person within the council who's taking responsibility for the working group and is acting as the intermediary, the attachment point, the communications point between a working group and the council. And that role is being defined within the working group process. So that would be where I think that would be located, is who are the people here that want to be the liaisons, and it doesn't necessarily need to be one, but it has been.
Okay. Anyone have anything else to add on that?
Yeah, this is Bertrand. Just on what Avery was saying, she was actually addressing an issue I wanted to raise after your recap. One question is, there are two options when I was saying the council would designate someone to do this interim chair or kick-starting the process. It could be either somebody outside or potentially somebody within the council in a role of facilitation. And I fully take into account Marilyn's concern. So it shouldn't be necessarily one or the other, and it's a facilitation role. But one option to make things relatively easy could be that the council designate one person within the council to steer this process in the very early stages, or decides to appoint somebody outside.
Okay.
Yeah, well, the liaison role is different than the chairing role. It's very different.
Couldn't it be only one for the very early stage?
No, I don't think so. Because you have to keep the communications going. I mean, obviously, my opinion. You have to keep the communications linked between the council meetings and what's going on, as opposed to having to throw things over the wall. So you need to, I mean, you need to have many people at the beginning, but you need to have the council link, I believe. Otherwise, the process gets lost it doesn't have an easy way of communicating during the meetings, of bringing issues back and forth. It just makes it more difficult. You really need that person who is a member of the council who can act as the in-between person. Otherwise, I think the system lacks its continuity. I mean, its connectivity, but that's, of course, just a personal opinion.
So, sorry,
just on that point, maybe I was not clear. What I meant is that the council could choose to have somebody from the council to play this role of interim chair at the very beginning, and then this person could act as a liaison afterwards, as you describe.
That's we've had the liaison act as an acting chair, and then the first act of the first meeting is to pick a real chair. But yeah, that has happened.
Okay.
I think I got that. I think I followed that. Any other questions or comments? Do we want to talk a little bit about maybe note for the email some of the concerns or talk about voting thresholds of how to approve a charter?
Jeff, this is James. I posted something in the chat, and again, I don't want this to turn into a or it's not my intention to turn it into a long discussion, but I really just had a question about the different thresholds for an in-scope PDP versus an out-of-scope PDP, and is it published somewhere, or maybe someone can point me in the right direction where I can find out how that determination is made, or what criteria are used to decide whether something, whether one voting threshold applies over another?
So I think we talked about this on the last call. And the it's not really the council's not defining whether something's in or out of scope. It's really a recommendation by the staff as to whether they believe it's in or out of scope, and the scope is defined as in or out of the scope of the GNSO, not of like the picket fence. That's not what they're looking at.
Oh, okay. I remember that thread last time, and I just wasn't sure if that was new material or if we were changing something that was published elsewhere, so thanks.
Yep, that's okay. And so that should be being written up by Marika as well. So as far as the voting threshold then, so which does matter whether it's in or out of scope, but let's assume it's in scope just to make it an easy case or an easier case. If it's in scope, then I think what Margie said is it just requires 33% of both houses. Was that what you said for the PDP?
Hold on. Okay, so if it's within scope, it requires more than 33% of both houses or more than 66% vote of one house.
So the question is then, if you apply the, we could take that the same standard for approval of the charter, or we could make it the higher standard of a majority of both houses, which is the default rule. And there's pros and cons about each one, right? I mean, you could make the argument that, okay, the charter is so important because it sets the scope of the PDP, that you want the majority of both houses to agree on it to make sure that nobody's going to complain that the work that's being done is out of the scope of the out of the scope of what was the process that was initiated. On the other hand, the negative or one negative is that having a higher standard could mean another blocking mechanism by one of the houses if they didn't want to see the PDP done in the first place. So we need to kind of weigh those concerns and discuss them. Can anyone else think of pros and cons about either approach? Does anyone have any thoughts on what on that?
Jeff, it's Paul.
Sure, Paul.
I think this is a very important one, and obviously there's not enough of us on the call to get all the perspectives. I can imagine some views from some of our colleagues that aren't on the call today, and would ask, can you simply just be sure to include this, the four questions that are out there, if we're going to try and discuss them on the next call. But I also think putting them into an email, you know, reiterating them, and this is the fifth, and just lay it out for folks, and hopefully those who feel passionately, and I'm sure there's some who feel very passionately about different threshold standards, you know, give them an opportunity to communicate that on the list.
Yeah, I definitely will do that, and I think that's the plan. I was hoping that maybe we can come up with a list of pros and cons of that approach, and then put that out like as guidance so people can comment on it. I find that when you put overarching questions that are really general out, it doesn't get answered. But if you could say, you know, what are the voting thresholds, and define it, and then say, you know, the group of people that were on the call found that the positives of having this threshold are these, the negatives are these, versus the positives and negatives of having other thresholds, it may stimulate more feedback.
Yeah. Then I would just add that using the same threshold or the higher threshold, you can make the argument that it's simpler. It's one set of standards to keep in mind, and that works both for and against.
Right.
You know, just make it to the people. You can keep it simple, but there may be folks who feel that there's a very valid reason why such a one-size-fits-all should not apply. So simplicity would be a pro, but it can also be a con.
Yeah.
I agree with that.
Can I add something?
Sure.
Having just heard that, I mean, one of the problems that we've had in the council this time is if, for chance, someone did want to include the charter in the PDP vote, because they have different kind of thresholds, that becomes impossible. By making them the same, another advantage of making them the same, is it does, while we're not saying there must be a charter in a PDP vote, it allows for that level of flexibility. If there happens to be one ready because people did it, et cetera, especially on the long planning thing, then, you know, maybe that helps. So that would be an advantage, certainly. It would make it possible to put them in a common motion.
I would support the argument as well. I think simplicity is better in that respect.
So for simplicity, you're saying
same threshold,
keeping the same threshold as to initiate the PDP.
Yeah. Knowing that once again, in the council, as in the rest, voting is the last resort. I mean, I really insist on that because we keep talking about voting, but on such a subject, there should be an agreement on the topic. I mean, launching a PDP where there is a strong disagreement within one part of the community on the scope of the discussion is probably a recipe for the working group not to work correctly. So even if there was a split decision or a situation where one house was really wanting an issue and the other one was not so-so, the objective is that the discussions and the recipe for success is to make sure that the charter will accommodate the views of the other side as well. Otherwise, it's doomed from the onset. So consensus is the objective, and the voting threshold is just the last resort.
Okay. Does anyone think that there should be, or can anyone think of the pros in favor of having a higher threshold? Meaning the default council threshold, which is a majority of both houses.
I mean, I can think of, the only one I can think of is that it would be more of a more stability. For example, if you said perhaps the first charter went at the same threshold, but changes went at the other ones, is basically then you'd be sort of saying that, you know, a charter can't just waver in the wind. And it's once you've set one in place, you need a certain level of consensus. And if you can't get consensus, at the very least, you need the majority vote. So certainly, you know, that would bolster those that say once you start working on something, you don't want it to flap without consensus.
Okay, Paul?
Yeah, just to follow on what Aubrey's saying, I think that's, you can make an argument for it when there's a not in scope issue, because there may be counselors who disagreed with the staff recommendation, and there may be, you know, a big difference of opinion within the council about whether the issue should go forward or not. And I think in such a situation, having a higher threshold is probably defendable.
So, Margie, can you review when it's not in scope, it's 75% of one house, and what is it?
Okay. To initiate a PDP not within scope, it requires a vote of more than 75% of one house and a majority of the other house.
So that's going to, if you say the default rule is the same as initiating the PDP, you actually have a higher standard for approving the charter anyway. Because that would be higher than the default rule.
Then I think that works.
It sounds like what the people, at least on this call, are coming out in discussing the pros and cons. Obviously, this is just informal, and you could change your mind later. But it sounds like people on this call are in favor of just making the approval of the charter the same standard as approval of the PDP. So if it was in scope, it would be the 33% of both houses or 60% of one house. And if it was the if it was not within scope, it would be either it would have to be 75% of one house and 25% of the other.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Majority of the other house.
I'm sorry, and a majority of the other house, yes.
Oh, interesting. Mm-hmm.
So one house could never initiate a PDP that's out of scope alone?
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct, Margie?
Yes.
Okay. So, I mean, it sounds like informally this group kind of... sounds like this group is at least in sort of some agreement, and we could put that, Margie, in the email that, you know, just an informal discussion. This is what the group had come up with, but we obviously want feedback from anyone that wasn't on the call, or if anyone on the call has kind of a change of heart, they obviously could comment on that as well. So let me ask a follow-up question then. If the working group comes back with changes to the charter, should that be the same? Should that require a council vote? Is question one. And two is, should that be the same thresholds as we just talked about? Let me start with question one. If the working group comes back and says that there should be change or recommends changes for whatever process they have, does that require a vote of the council to change it?
I don't have the screen in front of me. Can I put my hand up? This is Aubrey.
Sure, yes. Aubrey?
Okay. I think that, again, if it can get consensus, and that's why within the informal process, you know, that generally I've been using, and so something that works is basically you ask if you need a vote on something. Is there agreement on this? Do we need a vote? And if you don't, then you've got consensus. But otherwise, yes, there does need to be a vote, because as a management body, it's best if it has consensus. But if someone believes that the issue is touchy enough, controversial enough, or whatever, that it needs to go to a vote, that then it does. And then I would argue for the stronger threshold, simply because you don't want it to be trivially easy to change charters. You want people to look at it and think about it.
Okay. Does anyone else have any, I think that makes sense. Anyone else have comments on that? So what Aubrey's saying is yes, should require a vote of the council, but it should be the default standard, which is a majority of Well, actually, Aubrey, it's not a higher standard.
Well, it's for the out of scope.
But, I mean, in either case, for simplicity's sake, would everyone support the majority of both houses default rule?
Yeah, I think of it as a standard administrative action at that point. You know?
Paul, Bertrand, James, any?
Jeff, if I may say, sorry for the general nature of the comment. I think as a general rule, it is important to try to make as little as possible or as little as necessary obstacles to beginning to address an issue and to put iterative steps to check whether there's agreement on the way it is going. The reason why I'm saying that is because there might be cases where one particular group or subgroup has a real deep concern with one issue, and another group, for either very valid reason or self-interest reason, is strongly opposed to the issue being addressed. I think it is dangerous for the organization that the mechanisms are being used to not address the issue if it is a real concern to one group, because the longer you wait, the more protracted and the more tense the issue can become. So my natural tendency as a general rule is to keep in mind that not only the goal is to have consensus, but on the other hand, the goal is also to allow issues to emerge as quickly as possible and to be discussed as broadly as possible in a less formal way at first, and to progressively evolve into something that is really making and taking decisions. Because the three-year experience that I have with ICANN show that sometimes it takes a long time to put an issue on the agenda, because one actor or a group of actors is not really keen on that, and there's only one pushing. And sometimes, when the issue finally arrives on the plate, it becomes harder to solve because the period where you need to address it is becoming shorter. So if we can keep in mind that the lower the threshold for starting to explore an issue in a very informal way and formalizing it along the way is more important than having a very high-level range of principles that guarantee that only issues perfectly framed get into a very formal process, I think the first method is better. So it's a general guiding principle, I would say, lowering the threshold and the barrier to entry for an issue to emerge.
Let me ask a question, Aubrey. If a working group comes forward and recommends changes, I'm assuming it's a pretty low threshold for them to get it on the agenda for the council.
Oh, yeah. No, those things come on the agenda as soon as they're ready. I mean, in fact, you know, one part of, and of course agendas probably change, but the way I've been doing the agenda is one part of the agenda, we cycle through the status of all the groups, and if the liaison has any issues that need to be dealt with, they get dealt with. And, you know, they'll be sent out on email on the list, hopefully as soon as the request is made formal. And on most of them, I've been being let know in advance that it's coming. So, I mean, there's no walls. Obviously, people have to keep talking and working with each other, and it works. But, yeah, those things get there quickly. And one thing I think I did since I started talking, one thing I think I disagree with Bertrand perhaps, is that I think that things have to be fairly strict and have to be fairly formal and milestones set and work items set with a real threshold for changing them. Otherwise, no work ever gets done. There's really a balance in working groups between them lasting into infinity versus the precision with which their goals and deliverables and milestones are defined. And so, yes, you have to be able to change them when they're not right, when new ones are needed and stuff. but if it's trivially easy to change them, they will never get done.
Actually, sorry, Jeff, I understand what Avery's saying. I just want to make clear, and sometimes it's my English that is failing me. What I meant was not so much the process for changing the charter or the scope or the subject of a working group. It was more the early stages so that the issues first emerge. And I do believe indeed in the progressive refinement of work rather than setting up frameworks that are usually not followed afterwards, because people set very ambitious timelines, for instance, or deliverables, and then it doesn't really produce it in the right time. So I'm very much more into a progressive methodology, but it's probably again a question of balance with what Avery was saying, which I don't object in general.
Okay. Does anyone else have any comments on the charter, the issues that we've discussed? Because I think we're coming across the hour and a half mark, and I think we have enough to put some more questions on the on email. And I think we actually had a really good discussion on probably one of the more important parts of this phase two document, our stage two document. So I just saw an invite go out for next week on the 30th. So I still think if people can make it, we should have that call. Maybe we'll have a different mix of, or an additional people that can make that call, so we could talk more about the timelines from the planning initiation phase, and then address these questions, and then continue on with stage two.
Now, one last thing. If you send me a quick summary, I can read it out, and if you want anything reported at today's meeting, I can read it out when we get to that point, and I will include the plea for more participation. But if there's anything you want me to say to the group, just send it to me in the next half hour or so, and I'll try to make sure to look for it. And if Glenn is listening, she'll remind me to look for it when I forget.
Okay, I will try to.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you, guys. Thank you, everyone, for coming. And, it's a good discussion. Thank you.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thanks, Jeff.
Bye, Jeff. Bye.